Hello, it's Friday, April the 30th. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is The Andrew Pearce Show, and it's coming, as ever, from the Daily Mail newsroom. You like James Bond? Do you think you could be the next Q? Well, stay tuned, because we'll show you how you might at least have a fighting chance. The right to disconnect. If you're working from home, should it be enshrined in law when you can say to the boss, no more emails, no more phone calls? More on isolation rules in care homes. Aren't the rules now too draconian? But first, jabs now for people over 40. We're getting closer and closer, aren't we, to some form of herd immunity. So how will this impact on the hospitality industry? I'll be talking to somebody who owns not one, but 11 venues in London. Anyone aged over 40 and over in England can now book their COVID jab from today. This is as infection rates have dropped to their lowest level since early September in England, down almost 9% on last week. But pubs and restaurants are still not allowed to serve indoors. Nightclubs not set to reopen until the 21st of June at the earliest. I'm joined now by Charlie Jilks, who's founder of Inception Group and owner of 11 London venues, including Bart's, Bunga Bunga, and Maggie's. Charlie, we've talked before, a little bit of progress for your industry, but not much. How many of your venues have outdoor space?
Hi there, Andrew. Yes, well, it's a sort of psychological reopening for us, the sort of the 12th of April date. We've got five venues with outside space. Only one's really got substantial space. But look, it's a move in the right direction. It's nice to see sort of people back out enjoying themselves, to see our staff back at work at some of the venues. But, you know, I think to be realistic, venues and operators in London don't have a huge amount of outside space. And, you know, economically, it doesn't make sense for us at the moment, really. This is a start, and psychologically feels good, but it's not going to be kind of meaning the tills are ringing to any great level.
And now you've seen that people now over 40 can book their COVID jabs, that infection rates are down to their lowest level since September. Are you hoping that the government may look again at some of this reopening so that on May the 17th, when we have the next partial lifting of lockdown, that all your businesses can be set free?
I mean, that would be fantastic. It's been a long time coming. And, you know, I think actually we really could be open inside right now. If you look at people piling into shops, and queuing around the block, it does seem slightly unfair that hospitality once again has carried the can. But it's not much too longer to wait. And actually, on the 17th of May, it would be great if they eased more restrictions and perhaps relax the rule of six slightly. That's a big barrier for us, especially with our venue Bunga Bunga, which traditionally has groups of 20 and 30, having large birthday celebrations and events are key to that business. I mean, those restrictions are the key ones. The 21st of June is the date we're really focused on, and getting those restrictions relaxed, because, you know, we've taken on rents and venues with capacities that make financial sense to us. And without operating at those capacities, you know, we are hugely inhibited. And we really need people standing at the bar again and being able to do what they did pre-COVID.
How devastating has this been for your business?
It's been a hellish year. You know, I think for us it was, you know, the shock of the first lockdown, but then it was the two false starts, and also just the restrictions became harder and harder. I mean, I think that we all understand this has been a terrible global pandemic. We've all had to play our part. We've understood our nightclub couldn't reopen. I think, you know, there's been frustration along the way. Some of the rules have just been ludicrous, like the Scotch egg rule and the 10 p.m. curfew, which actually made matters worse. We've had a real, you know, tussle with our insurers, AXA, who've refused to pay out on money we're owed. But I think, you know, we're now trying to focus on the future, and, you know, there's definitely consumer demand. People want to get back to normal. It's all about what we're allowed to do and when we're allowed to do it.
Are you hoping also, just finally, Charlie, when you do reopen, we know that the government is developing an app, an NHS app, so people can travel abroad. I think that's partly because countries abroad will require that sort of authentication before they let people in. How big a burden would it be for your businesses if they bring in some form of ID authentication, COVID authentication around the time of your reopening?
I think the worry for us is you know, the big question is, when are our, you know, the younger adults going to have a vaccine? You know, we're talking about this being required from 21st of June. And, you know, most sort of people in their 20s won't have had one jab, let alone two. So that's a real worry. I think the reality is when people enter a nightclub, on the whole, there's a council requirement for an ID scan. So it would be less onerous for a business like that to have to check it. Whereas obviously it's a huge payroll implication. I think I read the Green King, if this was imposed, it would have £100 million payroll implication per annum. Because you know, simply having to have people on the door to check it. I really hope it doesn't come to that. I just hope the data continues moving in the right direction and actually we reach that point of herd immunity where actually COVID is a thing of the past and the efficacy of the vaccine and the uptake hopefully feels positive that we're moving in that direction.
Are you too young to have had your jab?
I'm 37. So I read in the paper this morning that sort of mid-May is when I'm due to be having the call up, and I will be in there as quickly as possible.
Quite right too. That's Charlie Jokes, who's the founder of Inception Group, which owns many venues including Bart's, Bunga Bunga and Maggie's. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. Ministers are now under renewed pressure to ban what are being increasingly called barbaric isolation rules for residents of care homes. Current guidance states residents who leave the home, even for a walk in the park, must isolate alone in their room for 14 days on their return. It means the UK's 400,000 plus care home residents have been effectively trapped within the same walls for the past 13 months. Mike Padgham is chairman of the Independent Care Group. I just don't understand why they're doing it, Mike, because most of these residents, if not all of them, have had both the vaccines and nobody else is being subjected to this sort of level of isolation.
No, I think the government's being overcautious. And I think that if people are going out for a walk on their own with their carer or out for a trip to see the scenery in a minibus, then they shouldn't have to isolate for 14 days. In fact, not isolate, have to isolate at all. I can see the need for some isolation if they're going to mix in perhaps larger groups outside with people who haven't been vaccinated. But at the minute, I would like to see the government bring some common sense in and allow more discretion and guidelines to give people some freedom now.
Do you think every home is complying with these draconian rules?
Well, I think you're caught in the middle. Although the government says it's guidance, it's up to the homes to work out whether they can or they can't. If you, at your peril, sometimes go against government guidance, because if something goes wrong, unfortunately, you find there's no one there to help you. I think some homes, if I take my own for example, we are actually allowing trips out in minibuses for people who live already together to see the scenery and the seaside, because we don't think the risk is very great at all. And I think, you know, nothing in life is risk-free, is it? I think people have been kept indoors for over a year, as you say, and they deserve, like everyone else, to have their freedom. Who are we to say you can't go out, for example? It's a free society, and these are people's homes, and they deserve better.
And we know that fresh air is good for us. We know getting out of the same enclosed space is good for us. We know there have been all sorts of problems now with a rise in mental health because people have been stayed at home. That, of all people, must be affecting your residents probably more than most, because some of them are physically vulnerable already.
Yes. And I think, you know, mental health is very important. So, you know, there's a risk of, keep people from protecting from COVID-19. There's a risk of their mental health. So I think, helping people's mental health, allowing them to get the fresh air, does them the world of good. And I think the risks now with, thankfully, figures are going way down now. The risk in the community is very slight, is that we should unlock a bit quicker. I understand they need to be cautious. We need to make the most of the summer and the good weather we're going to get, because, you know, not being negative, if we do get a slight spike in the autumn, as many predict, then we don't want to go backwards again. We need people to give them the freedom now. Caution is important, but also is freedom as well.
Just finally, Mike, what is the latest, do you understand, with the growing pressure for all care home staff to have a vaccine? Well, the vaccine rollout is now being extended to people between 42, over 42 year olds.
Yes.
We've talked to carers on this podcast, say, look, I just don't want to have it. I don't believe in vaccines. Do you think it should be compulsory? Will it become compulsory?
Well, I don't know if it's going to become compulsory. The government's on a consultation at the minute. My view is, I don't think it should be compulsory. I think we should put more effort into making it voluntary. I do think we can get the numbers down that not being vaccinated if we show them, give them a bit more time, a bit more encouragement. But I believe we live in a free society. It should be up to people to choose. Because in a care home, for example, what are we going to do with staff that refuse to take if it is compulsory, we can't redeploy them elsewhere because their job is caring. So we're going to get stuck in legal challenges from that front if it's compulsory too. So I think the government should put more effort into voluntary vaccination, and I think gradually those numbers will get better.
And are most of, if you don't mind me asking, are most of your staff undergoing a vaccination anyway?
Yes, we've done quite well. We've got over 95% of our staff already vaccinated.
Very good.
And what we're having with those staff who haven't is they wear a better high-grade face mask. But I think I can get those numbers close to 100% if we do it by discussion without coercion. I think it's the way to go.
All right, that's Mike Padgham. He's chairman of the Independent Care Group. Always good to talk to you. If you enjoy The Andrew Pearce Show, you can subscribe to us. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google or Spotify. And you can always get in touch by tweeting us at Mail Plus or me at Tory Boy Pearce. So should workers have a right to disconnect and be able to, frankly, ignore emails from the boss? Several countries already have right to disconnect laws where employers are legally required to agree rules with staff, but when they can and cannot be contacted for work purposes. All of this, of course, has become more and more significant because of the lockdown. The Union Prospect is urging the United Kingdom to adopt a similar rule here, with a recent poll by Opinion finding that 30% of remote workers report working more unpaid hours than before the pandemic. I'm joined now to talk about this by Rachel Suff, who's Senior Policy Advisor at the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development. Rachel, it is a big issue now, isn't it? Because so many people have been working from home, and I suspect so many people will continue to work from home. When can we switch off from the boss?
Yeah, it's a really important issue, and we've got research showing that actually organisations haven't been doing enough to really tackle our always-on culture over the past year during the pandemic. And it's increasingly a problem for people working from home, in particular that blurring of the boundaries between work and home and not being able to step away from the laptop. I think we need to understand why that's happening.
Yeah, and I guess it, because if you come downstairs, you have your breakfast, you find a place in the flat or the house to work. If you've got lots of rooms, that's okay. But it might be, imagine if you're in a studio apartment, you've got no way to escape. And then if the boss keeps calling or keeps emailing you, how do you switch off?
It's really hard for workers if they're in that situation where there's that expectation from the boss, from the organisation, to be switched on when they really should be having downtime and relaxing. That's so important for our well-being. And really, organisations have to set the right expectations. Those who don't want their staff to suffer from fatigue and stress from never being able to switch off really need to set clear boundaries and encourage good routines and healthy self-care, encourage people to take breaks and so on. There are ways you can do it, because it's not technology that's the problem per se. It's technology that's enabling this always-on culture, but it's actually other factors like workloads, deadlines, the culture, the expectations from managers and so on that's driving it.
It must feel a bit for some people too, I imagine, Rachel, like if it is difficult to switch off from the office or whoever it is you're working for, a bit like sleeping at work because there's no escape.
Yeah, and it's not healthy. You know, we've got working time regulations in this country. They were brought in through Europe, through health and safety law in this country, because I think that that's recognising how having time off and just not working long hours around the clock, it's not healthy. So it's protecting our health. It's a safety issue to actually take those regular breaks, have good sleep patterns as well. You've mentioned sleep. That's all really important. And we're not going to have good sleep if we're really stressed.
Yeah, and I wonder, do you go along with the idea of the Union Prospect, which says we should adopt the same laws that have been adopted in some countries? And I know there is an employment bill. If they say that the union says you could attach something to an employment bill to redraw that blurred boundary.
I mean, certainly understand and sympathise with where the union is coming from and those concerns that they've got and what's prompted that call. We're not convinced at the CIPD that change in the law will have the right impact necessarily. Yes, without a doubt, organisations need to be much better encouraging it, actively managing technology, encouraging people to have healthy time off and so on. But if we think about flexibility, if you did have a blanket kind of arrangement, so I don't know how this law might work in practice, but if there was a kind of blanket, very prescriptive approach so that people had to, I mean, I know in a couple of countries, you know, the servers are switched off and some organisations have done that, that would potentially for some people cause more stress for those people, for example, who want to take a bit of time off to look after the children and then switch on again afterwards and catch up. You know, that's real flexibility. So yes, you don't want to penalise those.
Yeah, because, and I guess if you are working from home, you do need that flexibility.
I think you do. And I think, you know, we found that, that people at CIPD certainly have really, really valued that complete sort of empowerment to use their time most effectively. And some people have been logging on very early in the morning, whilst others, you know, later on in the evening. I do, but what I've got is a disclaimer at the bottom of my email that sends a very clear message on every single email. If you receive this out of working hours, it's because I've got a very flexible working arrangement. I do not expect you to even read this or certainly not respond out of work hours.
Yeah.
So it's sending a really clear message to not inadvertently put pressure on people.
Fascinating. That's fascinating stuff. That's Rachel Staff. She is the Senior Employee Relations Advisor at the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, so it's that part of the programme when we talk matters sport. Who better than to talk it to and with Matt Gatwood, Deputy Sports Editor of the Daily Mail. So a night of conflicting fortunes in Europe, Matt. It looked pretty bleak for Manchester United at half-time against Porto, but somebody put something in their water or tea, whatever they drink at half-time, because they knocked Porto for six, didn't they? Literally.
They did. Well, Roma, they play in Roma, of course.
Roma,
And they did. They knocked them for six. They got five second-half goals. So, yeah, whatever was in their half-time cuppa did the trick. So, and it was inspired, really, by Edinson Cavani, who has had an okay season at United. You know, sort of veteran striker they got from PSG. But, you know, United, he hasn't been 100% fit, to be fair to him, but he certainly showed his worth last night with one cracker and another good goal as he got two. And just underlined how much Man United would actually like to keep him, because at the moment his contract runs out this summer and they'd definitely like to keep him for next season as well. But yeah, that basically puts Manchester United in the Europa League final, because there's no way you wouldn't have thought that Roma will come back from 6-2 behind. But who will they play? The other one's right in the balance. It was a really... Arsenal, again, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get with them, do you? I know you're a big fan, but you just don't know what you're going to get.
Well, you of all people ought to know, because you've been supporting this hopeless team for years, Matt.
No, and I don't know what you're going to get with them. And for the first half last night, they were woeful against Villarreal away, against their old manager, Unai Emery. So then some of the players might have a point to prove. But they went 2-0 down then, went down to 10 men, and it looked absolutely bleak and as if they were definitely heading out. And then they managed to get an away goal. So that one is right in the balance, 2-1 to Villarreal going into next week's second leg in London. So, you know, who knows? You just don't know with Arsenal what team's going to turn up and what sort of performance they're going to put in. So it's looking like it's possible that it could be an all-English final, but we'll have to wait and see next week, see how Arsenal get on.
All right. And finally, in the world of cricket, because the cricket season's underway now, never really ended, Matt, did it?
Never ended.
Sir Alistair Cook, the former England captain, Essex, isn't he?
He is.
Grinding out the runs.
Yeah, grinding out the runs. So he got another ton. So that's his 68th first-class 100, which he racked up for Essex yesterday. Now, obviously, he's retired from England duty, and that's not a problem. But it is remarkable to think that, you know, what are we, about 3 years since he last played for England, that he is still going out there and getting runs in the county scene. You know, you'd think he'd be running his farm or have his feet up or working in the media, or which he does, you know, he does do all those things. But the appetite to still get runs for Essex is remarkable. So, you know, fair play to him. And yeah, he did it. Yesterday he got 100. And as I say, that's his 68th first-class 100. So, unfortunately, he can't be selected by England. And there were a few other players who, there's a couple of places up for grabs in the England team. So these early county rounds are quite important in terms of people putting up a hand to say, you know, select me. So Dan Lawrence...
Why can't they select Alistair Cook? Why can't he go back in as a player, a batsman?
He wouldn't want to, basically. He retired. He said that.
Feels he's done his time.
He's done his time. I think the emotional and mental toll, you know, it's happened on him, and he was ready to hang up his boots and not go back there. And also he bowed out, if you remember, with an amazing century at the Oval, where he got a standing ovation in his last test. And I think he'd be hard pushed to beat that if he bowed out again down the line. So, yeah, he's done. He won't be coming back. And it remains to be seen, you know, there are places up for grabs. Some of those people who were trying to get those places didn't do so well, aren't doing so well this season, and others are. So it's very much up in the air. Adam Lythe could have got runs for Yorkshire yesterday. He failed with a duck, so that sort of meant that he goes back down the pecking order. Haseeb Hameed, who'd also got two centuries last week, he failed with a duck as well. So, and James Vince also got a duck. So, you know, he's another one who would have been hoping to force the England selectors. So, some of those who should have been doing well to try and get an England place didn't do so well. And one of those who won't play for England again did very well.
Indeed. That's sport for you. That's Matt Gatwood, the Deputy Sports Editor at the Daily Mail. Thanks for joining us. In the Bond films, Q, of course, provides 007 with an array of gadgets from Aston Martin sports cars with ejector seats to ballpoint pens that turn into grenades. MI6 is now recruiting a real Q, with the head of Britain's Secret Intelligence Service saying, "We're looking for a new Q. If you want to serve the country by helping MI6 to develop the operational technology of the future, please take a look." I'm joined now by Rebecca Camber, Daily Mail Crime and Security Editor. Trouble is with the ad, Rebecca, it suggests somebody's either having a bit of a laugh or because it says they want the technology chief to help disrupt activity to promote the UK's interests. Whatever do they mean by that?
Well, that's a very good question. There was quite some fanfare yesterday. This is the very first time that MI6 has posted an advert externally for the position. And in fact, there was a massive blooper, as you've just pointed out. They inadvertently suggested that MI6 has the ability to disrupt activity in the UK's interest. Now, today, they were very quick to correct that mistake. There were two commas suddenly inserted, which made much more sense. But as you say, it just shows that in such an important advert here, there seems to have been a bit of a slip up. You'd have thought in the advert for Q, this is a major, major position within MI6 that they'll be looking at the fine print. In the films, it's all about bagpipes, flamethrowers, laser watch, invisible cars. But actually, in the advert, what they really want is inclusive management style, collaborative leadership approach, much more management speak than we might expect in those glamorous films.
Yeah, I mean, it is a real victory for the PC Brigade, isn't it, Rebecca? And do you think for a single second the person who becomes the next Q will come as a result of seeing that advertisement, whether it's on the pages of the Sunday Times or the Daily Mail, or if they see the advert online? Don't they already sort of have a good idea on who it's going to be? They're just going through the motions.
I think that's probably right. There could be some whiz kid sitting out there in front of a computer thinking, he's got the next technological solution, some incredible weapon, something that will absolutely shoot them out of, you know, in terms of what they really want. But I think that candidate is surely sitting already in MI6. To have the capability and the thought process, and as they suggest, that corporate management speak, often you would only find that within their own pool.
Yeah, exactly. And I it's quite interesting because you point out that the great Desmond Llewellyn, who played Q in God knows how many Bond films, he remarked to Sean Connery in Goldfinger, "I never joke about my work at 007, but actually everybody's laughing at MI6 today because of this stupid ad."
They are, unfortunately, and I think that is why they've been so quick to correct this, because unfortunately, as you say, it was released with great fanfare, put on Twitter by the head of MI6, and unfortunately that has been that embarrassing. to them.
Just finally, what's the betting it will be the first woman queue?
Well, interestingly, they've already had a female queue. They revealed that quite recently. So it's unclear whether this could be the second, third, I don't know, but they've already broken that.
Right, okay. And has any minister, do you think, read the Riot Act, just finally, Rebecca, to whoever messed up this ad? I mean, it comes broadly under the Home Secretary's remit, I guess, Priti Patel.
Well, a recruitment agency that looks for executives was tasked with drawing it up. So possibly they've got the flak today, it's hard to say. But surely somebody will have read the Riot Act regarding punctuation.
Absolutely. They certainly would if we'd made that mistake on the Daily Mail, Rebecca.
007 will be very cross.
Very, very cross indeed. That's Rebecca Kammer, who is the Daily Mail's crime and security editor. Thanks so much. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back on Tuesday, so have yourselves a very good bank holiday weekend. Let's hope it gets a bit warmer. And good night.